I'm sure if I asked the question, if you've had a personal encounter with suffering and pain in your life, everybody would raise their hand. If I asked if you've lost a loved one through a tragedy or through natural passing away, many of you would raise your hands as well. If I asked if you yourself have suffered an illness to which you saw no purpose other than pain itself, I would see some hands. If I asked if your life plan has suffered a loss by ways of a divorce or things that work out in a different way in your workplace, you would raise your hands. Even social suffering has been experienced in our community in recent months. And a very natural, very human response, if you will, for us to do in those times is to ask why. Why this pain? Why this suffering? Now we know there's good pain in our life. It's the pain of maybe not eating the donut we want to eat for the sake of losing a couple of pounds and health. There's a pain of going to the gym and enduring cardio and lifting weights and being sore 2 weeks after that in the hope of achieving health. But what is the response to a pain to which we see no purpose? A suffering that we just cannot understand? I don't know if in your life, but certainly in mine, I've turned to God sometimes and questioned Him. It's natural for many people when we experience deep pain to question. Perhaps question God's existence. Where are you? Do you really exist? Maybe question God's goodness, God's love. After all, if God is all good, all powerful, and all knowing, why doesn't He do anything right here and right now? In this situation of my loved one, in this suffering, pointless. It's a problem of evil, the problem of suffering. We hear in the Bible, and we hear in the Gospel, that Jesus is asked to go to cure Peter and Andrew's mother-in-law. After all, what good Christian man wouldn't ask Jesus to cure his mother-in-law? And he does so without saying a word. He goes, touches her by the arm, and raises her up. Jesus doesn't say anything. And then people hear that Jesus is in town and they start bringing him vast amounts of ill people. People oppressed by a demon. And Jesus cures them. Countless people are cured of their illnesses and cured of the oppressive demons that hold them still. The following day, Jesus is praying and the apostles come up to him and they tell him, Jesus, there's even more people here that are sick and oppressed by demons. They're looking for you. The whole town is out there just waiting for you to heal them, to cure them. And what's marvelous is Jesus' response. He says, I will go to the next town and I'll preach there. For that reason I have come to preach. And Jesus seems to be giving us an insight of something greater than just healing, intervening, exorcising demons. He seems to be giving us a response to human pain and suffering that goes beyond the mere solution of a miracle. Now, the story of Job, it's one of my favorite stories in the Old Testament. The story of Job is one of the poetic books. It's a prose. It's a story of the Old Testament. And it speaks of a godly man. He's a good father, a good husband, a good worker. And God has blessed him with vast amounts of land and with cattle and a big family as well, a big house. Job has been blessed by God and he knows it. And the story begins by God convening the children of God. That's what they're called in the book. And one named Satan shows up. And God asks him, "So where were you?" "Oh, I've been just wandering around the earth, just here and there." And Yahweh says, "Oh, so you've seen my son Job. He's a good man. Have you seen him?" And Satan says, "Yeah, I've seen him. But probably the only reason why he continues to bless you and exalt you and be so loyal to you is because you have given him all these things." "Sure, anybody would bless you if they have all this land, all this cattle, a perfect family, a work, everything. No issues in their life. Of course, they would bless you. But I bet," says Satan, "that if you let me tempt him, if you remove this barrier of protection that you have on him, then he'll show his colors. Then you'll see how quickly he curses you." Yahweh says, "Okay, I'll remove my protection on Job. Do whatever you want to his possessions, but don't touch him or his family." Satan takes away his cattle, kills them all, takes away his land and his house. He even breaks his promise and takes his family away. One by one, they start dying. And it's this part of the book of Job that you may be familiar with the phrase, the verse, "The Lord giveth, the Lord taketh away. Blessed be the name of the Lord." So Job has been faithful so far. But then Satan comes back for round two. And now he starts taking a toll in Job's very life, his health, physical and mental. And if you read the first reading again, you will see that these are the words of a severely depressed man. Man's life on earth is a drudgery. It's how it begins. These are the words of a man who cannot sleep. And when he does sleep, he doesn't want to get out of bed. There's no hope of happiness whatsoever. It says so in the first reading. He's lost all hope. Profoundly sad, and in today's words, clinically depressed. Later in the book, three men show up, friends of his, and they try to give an explanation to all this. "Well, Job, maybe you did sin and you didn't know it. Maybe you're not that good. Maybe you really deserve this in a way. Maybe you have offended Yahweh. But that's not enough for Job. No, no, no. My conscience is clear on that." There's a point when Job, trying to respond to these questions, "Where is God? Where is he now? If he's so just, why does he allow this?" that he turns to Yahweh himself. And in a formula of a lawsuit in those times, he accuses God for not being just. He calls him to trial. He accuses him publicly. And something terrifying happens. God actually shows up for the trial. God responds. And what does Yahweh respond? Well, let's look at chapter 38. "Then the Lord answered Job out of the storm and said, 'Who is this who darkens counsel with words of ignorance? Gird up your loins now like a man. I will question you, and you tell me the answers. Where were you when I founded the earth? Tell me if you have understanding. Who determined its size? Surely you know. Who stretched out the measuring line for it?'" In the following verses, Yahweh gives a beautiful hymn of creation. Chapter 38 and 39 speak of this. "Can you raise your voice to the clouds for them to cover you with a deluge of waters? Who counts the clouds with wisdom? Who tilts the water jars of heaven? Do you know when the mountain goats are born, or watch for the birth pangs of deer? Who has given the wild donkey his freedom? Will the wild ox consent to serve you or pass the nights at your manger?" This is the longest uninterrupted dialogue of God to a person throughout the whole Bible. 2 chapters long. But another interesting thing happens. Yahweh never responds actually to Job's question of why he's suffering. Yahweh never tells him, okay, Job, so I'm going to give you the backstory. So there's this guy, his name is Satan, and he's testing you in order to make you stronger, to increase your faith and your hope. So this is how it's going to play. God never mentions that. We never actually see that in the story. But the question of suffering still remains. Why does God allow this? Why doesn't Jesus, like in the gospel, go out and cure all these people? If he's a loving, compassionate God, why doesn't he turn his ministry just into healing and curing people, of freeing them from their burdens and the oppression? There's a theologian of our days, and reflecting on this idea of how does God respond, Job, to his suffering, he says the following words. Consider, for example, a child with aggressive leukemia who is suffering the pains of a bone marrow transplant and who wants to know why her mother does not help him and stop the suffering that she so clearly could do just by taking him out of the hospital. His mother could respond to him by explaining the benefits of the transplant, by giving him a medical account describing the reconstruction of healthy bone marrow. So she might tell her son, well, you see, you have a cancer that affects the blood, and the major blood products are produced by stem cells in the bone marrow. So what we're doing is removing some of your stem cells, cloning the healthy ones, and reinfusing them into your blood. Then we inject you with a series of cytotoxic drugs that destroys the diseased stem cells in your bone marrow. But they also harm the cells in your mucous membranes that line your mouth, your esophagus, and your gut. That's why you have sores in your mouth. That's why you're throwing up. That's why you're in pain. She says, this could be a good response, but then again, it might not be. What would that child do with that information? The child undergoing a painful medical procedure may be at least as frightened and hurt by what he takes to be his mother's abandonment of him, her apparent indifference to his pain and need, as by anything that is happening to his bones and mucous membranes. Wouldn't that child feel like his mom, the person who loves him the most, abandoned him? Even more, that she's just watching him suffer without intervening in any way. She's consenting to this evil in his life. In that case, the best response to his need for an explanation, perhaps the only response that makes love available to him, is for the mother to give her son a second person experience of her as loving him. This may be the best means in the circumstances to show him that she would only let him suffer in order to bring about some outweighing good for him that she could not get for him in any easier way. In cases in which an apparent betrayal of trust is an important part of the suffering, second person explanations have a special power to console. And that is what Job gets, a second person explanation. That in this dialogue, Yahweh is telling Job, look at the waters, look at the clouds, look at the foundations of the earth, look at the celestial bodies in all their beauty and perfection. Look at the horses, look at the deer and their strength. If I see them, how can I not see you? If I am present to the waters falling from the sky, if I am present to the marvels of creation that I made, how am I not to be present to you in your suffering? Yahweh's revelation is a revelation of presence. I see you. I am present to you in this dark hour of suffering and questioning. And so, maybe the true question we're asking is not, why do you allow this, God? Like the child would see his mom, why do you allow this? But to know and to experience that he walks with us. That like Jesus healing Peter's mother-in-law, without saying a word, he holds our hand. and the knowledge and experience that there is a greater good that outweighs the suffering that our intelligence is so blinded by. Our suffering increases our hope, our faith, our belief in a greater good that we cannot comprehend. After this encounter, and I suggest you finish reading the book of Job, Job converts his heart after this encounter. And he himself says, "Now I've experienced God in a much more intimate way than I ever thought possible. Now I have seen his love, his presence with my own eyes." Job ends up being even more blessed after that. Even more land, more cattle, a greater family, a bigger house, but especially a more intimate experience of Yahweh, of his justice and his love present in his life. A contemporary writer says, reflecting on how is it that Jesus says that blessed are those who cry and suffer, the following words: "Tears and affliction are proclaimed blessed because they make people more mature, more profound, more authentic, more sympathetic to the suffering of others. In a word, they make people more human." Friends, only in being more human can we be more divine. Only in being more human can God make us holier, stronger in our faith, in our hope that he is with us. May Mary, at the foot of the cross, who perhaps was asking herself these same questions, why him, why now, why this way, such a good man taken away from us, may she show us how to find the loving presence of our Heavenly Father, especially in those dark times of our suffering. May she show us the value of suffering, that we may encounter God's love in the cross. Sacred Heart of Jesus,